for today is United States v. Cardona. Mr. Chife?
Good morning, Your Honor. In this case, the district court committed error when it failed to consider Mr. Cardona's main mitigation argument in a meaningful way.
Can I just clarify, because I recall that the district court does say something, acknowledges that Mr. Cardona is making an argument for minimal participation in the offense, and so I just want to make sure I understand, are you arguing that he just doesn't say enough about that, or are you taking the position that somehow or another he doesn't discuss it?
Your Honor, we're taking the position that he didn't say enough.
Concede that the district court does say, I get it, you're arguing minimal participation, not influenced by that.
Well, yes, Your Honor. In fact, I think there are only really two places during the sentencing where the district court even came close to even addressing Mr. Cardona's role in the offense argument. And I think at one point during the proceedings, the district court stated or told Mr. Cardona, you shouldn't have let the co-defendant stay in your house once you saw a gun.
Right.
However, Your Honor, that comment touches, and we would say barely touches, Mr. Cardona's role in the defense argument that he made during his sentencing hearing. Because Mr. Cardona's argument was that his role, as compared to his co-defendants, who, by the way, set up the initial buy, set up the deal, who at least one of the co-defendants admits were more culpable. Both of those co-defendants profited from the sale of the firearm.
Well, but I just want to call your attention. This is page 26 of the sentencing transcript, and this is the court speaking. It's right toward the bottom, line 29. It says, there are two parts to sentencing. Mr. Chife and you want to concentrate on your minimal involvement in the offense. And he goes on to say, even though it's an assault rifle. And then the next page he says, but there are two parts, and it's not just this crime. It's what you've done before and whether your past catches up with you. And then he goes on to explain further the sentence. But, boy, that looks to me like he's aware that maybe this crime, it was minimal involvement, but there are other factors that persuade him a more significant sentence is necessary.
Well, we don't contest that the court realized or acknowledged the argument that Mr. Cardona was making during the sentencing hearing. I think our contention is that the district court didn't deal with that argument.
But you know, this is a problem we have in case after case, and it's hard to come up with a little formula of words. You know, is the district court supposed to talk for a page about this? Is the district court supposed to say, I get it, I know you're making minimal participant, but I'm not persuaded in this case that that's the right thing to do? I'm not sure that telling them to talk longer necessarily is going to give us much more insight than we already have.
Well, Your Honor, we don't suggest or even request that district courts expound on a length about a specific argument or a particular argument. But we do believe that the court needs to do more than just acknowledge that the argument was made. It has to, we believe, deal with it in a meaningful or in some way.
So in your ideal world, what would the district court judge here have said?
Well,
I agree with you, right? Well, I agree with your argument,
well,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, second choice. Let's go with your second choice.
If he was going to rule the same way he ruled, how much do you think, if you're us, how much do you think he needed to say?
We believe that the district court, at minimum, had to deal with the fact that the co-defendants, as compared to Mr. Cardona, were more culpable in this offense.
Right.
And deal with that.
Fine.
Which we believe he doesn't deal with at all. In addition, and look at how Mr. Cardona's role in the offense, as compared to his co-defendants, how that impacts the sentence which district court ultimately gave all three defendants. And so when we look at Mr. Cardona's role in the offense here, and then compare that to the sentences that both, or the sentence I should say, that both Mr. Monreal and co-defendant Vega received.
46 months, right?
Yes, I think one co-defendant who was the one who profited from the offense received probation. And granted, the district court did, during the argument, during the sentencing hearing, did say why he gave that defendant the probation sentence he did.
He thought he'd really rehabilitated, and then the judge says, well, I hope he didn't sell me a bill of goods, but this is what I think.
Yes, but with regards to defendant Vega, who we believe, by the way, had the same, different offenses, but the same criminal history as Mr. Cardona, the court didn't deal with at all. And the court didn't deal with why sentences, why a probation sentence, when just talking about the nature of the offense and the, Mr. Cardona's role in it, why a probation sentence for a person who instigated the offense, as opposed to a significantly higher, I think 71-month sentence for Mr. Cardona, why that was appropriate. So the court really kind of only stated in a passing way, Mr. Cardona's main mitigation argument.
Mr. Chief, was minor role argued as a guideline issue here?
It was not, Your Honor. It was argued in 3553A and the nature and circumstances of the offense.
Okay. I mean, isn't that kind of unusual?
Your Honor, I don't know whether it's unusual or not. That was the decision made below. And we believe that the Mr. Cardona's role in the offense argument fits well within the nature and circumstances of the offense under 35.
Sure it does. But I mean, particularly where the guidelines have this broad invitation about role in the offense, I'm just wondering how much there was to this.
That wasn't a decision made below. But it's not like, and the district court stated in dealing with the role in the fifth argument, said, well, Mr. Chaffee or Mr. Cardona, under the guidelines rule in the fence elements, it will not apply, and so therefore I'm rejecting as well under the nature and circumstances of the fence under 3553A. The court essentially just told Mr. Cardona, when dealing with the role in the fence argument, is you shouldn't have let Mr. Monreal stay at your house. I acknowledge, as Chief Joe Wood pointed out, that you've made this argument, but the other things I'm going to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I understood him essentially to be saying, all you guys did more or less the same thing, and the thing that looks like the pretty obvious factor driving the sentences is criminal history. Wouldn't you say?
No, Your Honor,
you don't have to agree.
That's not what I would say. Especially when, and I think both all the parties conceded that the defendants didn't do it, the same thing. And that was laid out by Mr. Cardona in his papers below, in addition to during the sentencing hearing.
Could you address the waiver issue in particular? As Chief Judge Wood was indicating, we're seeing a ton of these issues about under Cunningham. When does a judge say enough? When does a judge say too much? Judges can get themselves in trouble on other reasons for saying too much in sentencing. And Garcia Segura and Dinelli were really responses to that, to say, if you don't think the issue has been addressed sufficiently, you need to alert the district judge. Is that a real Cunningham error ought to be a pretty glaring one, that you can say, wait a minute, you didn't talk about this, which is what I'm most worried about.
Well, here's what we would say on the waiver issue, Your Honor. First of all, that Mr. Cardona didn't waive below, that he didn't waive his right to make this argument. We believe this case is distinguishable from what happened in Dinelli. In Dinelli, the district court asked defense attorney, or the defendant, do you have any objections to my sentence or the reasons for my sentence? Do you have any objections? And the Mr. Dinelli or Ms. Dinelli's, I think, attorney said below that, Judge, we have no objections to the explanations you've given and the reason for your sentence. We only want a lower guideline range or a lower guideline sentence. And so we believe that under Dinelli, the defendant and defendant's counsel did waive, affirmatively waive, a right. That's not what took place here in this case. In this case, after the district court gave its ruling, prompted by the government, the district court asked Mr. Cardona and counsel, essentially, is there anything else? You know, have I addressed all the arguments? Not, you know, do you have any objections to the reason I've given for the argument?
Saying the district court's invitation to you was not specific enough?
Well, what I'm saying is, Your Honor, under United States v. Ortiz, this court's decision on Ortiz, and the Supreme Court's decision in United States v. Olano, is that counsel below did not affirmatively waive a distinguished right or his right to appeal the district court.
Well, I think what you're saying, if I can put words in your mouth, I mean, if you look at Garcia Segura, there's a difference between complaining that there's an argument that you want to have addressed that hasn't yet been addressed. That was the moment to say, hey, you know, you didn't talk about diminished capacity yet, or you didn't talk about family circumstances yet, or whatever it may be. And the situation where the judge has addressed everything you wanted, you may not like how it came out, but you're saying, you know, our record is complete. And the last sentence of the excerpt from Garcia Segura that the government reproduces in its brief on page 12 says, an affirmative answer, meaning, yes, Judge, you know, you've talked about everything. An affirmative answer, however, would not waive an argument as to the merits or reasonableness of the court's treatment of the issue. So Garcia Segura itself seems to leave open your ability to say, you know, we don't have to just keep objecting ad infinitum. You know, we've got on the record our, in this instance, minimal participant or minor participant argument. And we're still going to say we think you got it wrong, but we don't need to rehash that ground any further. I think that's what Garcia Segura is trying to do.
We would agree, Your Honor. And in addition, we believe Rule 51, A and B, also states the same thing, does not require defense counsel or any party, once an argument has been made and a ruling has been made, to keep taking exception with the district court or lower court's ruling. If there are no further questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Thompson.
May it please the court. Joe Thompson on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, the district court addressed and rejected the defendant's primary mitigation argument at sentencing.
Right. And see, that's why I started out just trying to make sure I understood what Mr. Shifei's position was, because I read this transcript that way too. I see the district court looking at the minimal participant argument and simply not being persuaded that that was enough to override the criminal history that Mr. Cardona had amassed, which is also why I don't think we have any waiver here under the Garcia Segura framework, because it's been discussed. I mean, they've got their ruling on it. They don't like their ruling on it. They're entitled to complain about it. But it's not like, as I said, it's not like they suddenly want to bring in, you know, diminished capacity, too. You're not allowed to sit there and say, yes, you've talked about everything, Judge, and then come on up to us and say, oh, by the way, there was this other thing. So I'm trying to make some sense out of this excerpt from Garcia Segura that you guys very thoughtfully included in your brief, and that's where I come out.
Well, Judge, I think the key portion is the sentence before the one that you read aloud earlier, and that's that After the court has prompted defense counsel and asked whether they think the court has addressed everything, if they think that's not true, they should raise that Cunningham issue at that point.
But you're not reading that sentence right either, because if the response is in the affirmative, a later challenge for failure to address a principal mitigation argument would be considered waived. And these are all omission situations. I didn't say anything because I thought it was so weak as to not merit discussion. I didn't say anything because I thought there was no factual basis. I didn't say anything because in my own mind I rejected it. Here's why. But I think for arguments that have been made, discussed, and rejected, Garcia-Segura does not impose a de facto exception requirement.
Well, I don't think it's an exception requirement, Judge. It's a waiver with respect to the Cunningham issue. Obviously, the defense has not waived any challenge to the substantive reasonableness of the sentence.
And this defense hasn't waived anything about whether minimal participation should be taken into account. It's raised. It's discussed by the district court judge. It's in there. So naturally, at the end of the sentencing, when the judge says, "Is there anything else that you want me to talk about?" Why is he going to say, yes, talk about minimal participation when the judge says, "Oh, I just finished talking about that, you know, 15 minutes ago"?
Well, I think the issue is, Judge, that if in the Cunningham context, the question is, did the district court do enough to explain itself to allow the appellate review? And if you're saying no, that's the opportunity to raise that issue so the court can flesh out its reasoning, which would allow for appellate review of the reasonableness of the sentence. And that's where the sentence says, if not, the trial court would have the opportunity to clarify whether it determined that the argument was so weak as to not merit discussion. Has rejected the argument and provide a reason why. And that's what he's saying essentially happened here. The court rejected it without providing a reason. And I disagree with that. I agree with your Honor's conception of it, which is that the court said essentially they all have the same role in this offense. And notably, Judge Hamilton raised the issue of the minor role guideline reduction. I think part of the reason that wasn't addressed here is because this wasn't a crime of a gun sale. It was a possession count. So arguably each defendant's role in it was just as serious. In fact, in some sense, you might say Cardoto's was more serious because he was the one that possessed it on an ongoing basis because he stored the gun at his house. Be that as it may, it's sort of irrelevant. What the court said was, I'm not moved by that argument. I think they're all close enough. And your suggestion that this was an accident or just a poor judgment, I don't want to hear it because you shouldn't have done it and it's not acceptable. And in any event, this is all overwhelmed by the factor of your criminal history, which the court said was incredibly significant, called him a danger to the community. There were two prior attempted murder convictions, a series of drug convictions as well.
And the judge said that's quite different from Vega and Monreal.
Correct. Judge Monreal had one prior felony conviction. I think he got probation for it. And of course, as is laid out, he had, while on bond, on his own initiative, gone into a 30-day inpatient drug program, completed that successfully, and had taken other steps in his life that led Judge Kokoros to conclude he had changed his life. And that was in contrast to Mr. Cardona's lifetime of crime, as Judge Kokoros put it. In addition, Vega also, he had prior convictions, but not nearly as serious as Cardona's. I mean, two attempted murder convictions, that's about as serious as it gets. And of course, in the PSR and in the record, those were, one of them was a drive-by shooting, which the defendant shot an 8-year-old child.
And Cardona's a little casual about that, seems to me.
He was. Of course, the tenor of his colloquy, or his discussion with the judge, comes across in the cold record. Judge, his attitude towards the sentencing and his tone and demeanor in that. And I think that probably played a role in the sentence as well. But in any event, what the judge said was that this factor, I've considered it. I hear what you're saying. I'm not moved by it. And all with respect to all three defendants, the court explained that it was the criminal history and their background that was motivating the sentences with respect to those three. It wasn't the role in the defense because he didn't view that as being a significant factor. Now, they can challenge the defense, disagree with that, but of course, they're only entitled to have the court consider and address their arguments. The court's not required to accept them. Even an argument that from a defense standpoint might seem like a valid one. The court can say, whether or not that's valid, I don't think that's important here. What's important is the background. And that's what the court did here, Judge. And I think in doing so, of course, the judge, there's no challenge that it was an unreasonable sentence. And I think that the court fully addressed and rejected the defense defendant's primary mitigation argument. That's all the court was required to do here. It allowed for adequate appellate review. For that reason, we would ask that if there are no further questions, that you affirm the defendant's sentence.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Shifa, your time had expired, but if you want one more minute, I will give it to you. Because we were... All right. Thank you very much, then. Thanks to all...